When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Live from a bunker in the heart of the Ozarks, a podcast that will just wait outside your house across the street for 24 hours as if that's not at all creepy and totally sexy, it's SIFPOD. Welcome to SIFPOD Weekly, streaming live most Fridays, or available to download later in your podcast feed, unless, of course, you're a patron.
Patrons get perks.
Patrons get those perks.
May we.
I'm your host, Aaron Dicer, and he saw you squaring up with someone, so he came in swinging. It's Andrew Ormsby, ladies and gentlemen.
Ahoy, I got your back, buddy.
Each week we'll chat about movies, TV, and whatever else from the pop culture universe is on our minds. Anything on your mind, Andrew, from the pop culture universe or otherwise? How are things?
You made me watch a shark movie, Aaron. You made me watch a shark movie. And I didn't even know it was a shark movie, too.
Oh, no.
Yeah. I thought it was going to be about the cat. Well, it was kind of about the catacombs and stuff. But
right.
I was like, Oh, cool. It's creepy under the catacombs of Paris. No idea it was going to be a shark movie.
It is a creepy under the catacombs of Paris movie, for sure.
Yeah.
We will talk more about that. That is Under Paris. And the bike riders will be the two for today. And then we'll do some best ever challenge bike movies. And, of course, some buried treasure at the end as well. Checking in on the Summer Sum game. Hello, Pixar. Yes. all the things I believe to be true are apparently true about Pixar sequels. It is absolutely dominating the box office. Now, that doesn't mean that Deadpool versus Wolverine won't do better than Inside Out 2. It just means that Inside Out 2 is performing very, very well. Last I checked, $235 million domestically already, and it hasn't even...
$235.5 obliterated the second Up, which is Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, sitting at $160 million.
So I'm feeling pretty good. I'm feeling pretty good about having Inside Out 2 at number one. Well, you know, Deadpool again versus Wolverine, I'm sure will perform very, very well and might beat it. But I also like that Deadpool versus Wolverine is like last week of July kind of thing, where it doesn't have like, you know, a full... run like Inside Out 2 is gonna have. So I think it might be close. I think they're both gonna end up somewhere around 400 to 500 mil.
And, when does Despicable Me 4 come out? Because that's your number three, and I think that that's gonna be a big indicator on how well you do.
Yeah, Despicable Me 4 is the, you know, Despicable Me 4 and Deadpool are the two remaining, the two big boys that everybody had pretty high remaining to come out. Twisters is another one some people had on there that's still to come out. Quiet Place, a lot of people had that on their list, is still to come out as well. So there are some things that could surprise, but for right now, it does look like... you're right, Despicable Me 4 could also go crazy, but I really see Despicable Me 4 landing more in like the, you know, 250 to 300 million range if it performs really, really well. So we'll see how it goes. But yeah, if you want to check all that out, all the results and how everything is going, you can go to the sifpop.com website and just click where it says Summer Sum Game, and it'll take you to the results page, and you can see all the fun stats and everything. All right, let's go ahead and get into it, Mr. Ormsby.
Let's do it.
Let's chat a little bit about the bike riders.
I'm thinking of starting a riding club. Why? All those clubs do is sit around talking about motorcycles. That's what we do. When I was a boy, I had a
mind of my own. They don't belong nowhere else, so they belong together. But you're the man in charge.
I'm John.
We're the Vandals.
I'm Ben.
I like you guys.
After a chance encounter at a local bar, strong-willed Kathy is inexorably drawn to Benny, the newest member of Midwestern Motorcycle Club, the Vandals, led by the enigmatic Johnny. Much like the country around it, the club begins to evolve, transforming from a gathering place for local outsiders into a dangerous underworld of violence, forcing Benny to choose between Kathy and his loyalty to the club. The Bike Riders was originally going to compete for awards last year. It was one of many I got heads up that the screeners might be coming, and then just all of a sudden, it was like, nah, we're just going to make that a summer release 2024. Who knows why that decision was made, but it has been made. It stars Austin Butler as Benny, Jodie Comer as Kathy, and Tom Hardy as Johnny. Mike Faist also hopping in there as Danny. You'll also see Michael Shannon, Norman Reedus, some other faces you might know in these gangs as well. I was going to say it also comes to us from Jeff Nichols, who has a pedigree. So that's good information. But what did you think, Andrew? Did you like it, love it, dislike it, hate it, or it was just okay?
I'm going to go with really liked it.
Really liked it.
Yep.
Very nice.
What about you?
I'm going to go with liked it. Okay. Just right in the middle of liked it, which can feel like a really liked it or even a loved it from me when it's like a gang movie. Like, I just don't usually come away from gang movies having positive experiences. And really at its heart, this is a gangster film, right? Like, am I wrong in saying that?
You're not wrong in saying that it's a gangster film, but I would say that this is different from any other gangster movie that I've seen. Not because it deals with bike riders, but for the simple fact that this does not glorify the gangster lifestyle, I think.
Right, which is probably why I come away really liking it a lot more. So you had it a little higher than me. Yeah, keep talking about it. What are some of the things you liked about the bike riders?
Starting off with performances, go ahead and mark down Jodie Comer as one of my favorite performances of the year.
It's so good. Oh, she's so good in this movie. Oh,
yeah. She fully breathed life into this role. Her accent was on point. Her mannerisms and the way she carried herself made her seem like the completely different person to who she is in real life. And that's what I look for whenever I'm seeing somebody perform in a film. I want them to lose themselves in the role so much that I'm not seeing Jodie Comer or Austin Butler or Tom Hardy on screen. I'm seeing the performances, and that's what I saw out of her. So good on her. She was remarkable.
Yeah, she's incredible in this. I was thinking, you know, as I was thinking about why I like this movie, I was drawn to her so much. And I think it's more than just she gives an amazing performance. I think she is the movie. I think the movie centers around her in such a specific way. The themes of the movie, even the plot of the movie, what the movie's trying to say, where it's trying to go, has so much to do with her heart, her, you know, motivations, her persistence. I just think she absolutely gives this movie a foundation. Without that character and without that performance, I don't think I like this movie as much as I do. So
Totally agree.
I think she's phenomenal.
And she's our in too to this world, because she's an outsider just like us or most people who are going into this movie. So through her eyes, we're getting to experience this new world and the new rules that entails and all the things. So, yeah, it's great to have her, because if she isn't believable in that role, then you can't buy into the world. So good for her. Very, very good performance.
What else?
This is an eclectic group of people, and I found all of them and their individual stories fascinating. I think that's what Jeff Nichols is trying to highlight in this film, too. By the way, for those of you who don't know, I adore Jeff Nichols. He's one of my favorite directors. And I think that's what he's trying to highlight in this film, and that's all the societal rejects were able to find each other, and through their struggles of societal ostracization. That's a hard word to say.
Mm-hmm.
They found each other and formed, and they formed a new family. And one that's free of judgment and the rule of law to an extent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think there's a really neat thing that the movie does that I haven't seen other movies like this do, where you do get a sense at times that the movie admires these men, what these men are doing, and that's a bit difficult for me. But at the same time, I think it's just because the movie is admiring their humanity. Like, there's an empathy for these men. And again, so much of this comes from the Jodie Comer character, right? Like, seeing these men through her eyes. Like, she will say things about, like, you know, how their children, or, you know, how they're, you know, like, she almost diagnoses them in some ways, like, as almost a therapy of, you know, what has led them to be these people. And so when we see them through her eyes, we love them, you know, like, there's a real empathy for them, even though they're making terrible decisions and doing terrible things. We get a real insight to their humanity through her and through the way the movie presents them, and specifically through the way the movie ends. I think the end of this movie has a lot of impact in determining what this movie is getting at for its, you know, entire runtime.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
Go ahead.
I was going to say that I just building off of that and Jeff Nichols, like I said, he is one of my favorite directors, and his films have always captivated me, especially films like Mud or Take Shelter.
Mm-hmm.
What I like about this film of his is he was able to make a gangster movie, like I said, without glorifying the gangster lifestyle. I want to expand on that a little bit. I think that this film never makes the audience wish they were in a gang like this. I think that it shows the audience why some people might be attracted to this lifestyle and how someone could end up joining a group like this. But the entire time I was watching this movie, I was never getting the notion that Jeff Nichols was telling me, oh, it'd be cool to join a biker gang. I never got that sense from him.
Mm.
I want to also build off what you said about through her eyes, we're able to, you know, see these stories. And I think one of the big examples of this is Michael Shannon giving a monologue about how he was not able to join the Vietnam War.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of my favorite scenes in the movie, because I think that that scene really gives people an idea of what somebody would find attractive about this lifestyle. Mm-hmm. Like, society said, you are not good enough, you are not fit. And then here's a group saying, who cares what society thinks? If you want to be who you are, you can be who you are with us.
Yeah. Yeah, and there's the other thing this movie delves into, and I think in a really interesting and sensitive way, is ideas of masculinity and the ideas of how our culture continues to wrestle with masculinity and the more aggressive side of testosterone and just, you know, those kind of things. So it's interesting to see this movie in many ways admit that this is an outlet for something that is continually being pushed down in our culture, which is, you know, aggression and, you know, toxic masculinity is, you know, one of those phrases, those kind of things. And in my opinion, rightly so, these are things we need to process better, learn to do better, and not allow whatever hormonal impact our, you know, masculinity has on us to hurt other people. But this movie wrestles with it in a way that says, you know, this is a poor outlet for this, but it is something that the culture has to keep wrestling with. And again, this was, you know, the movie takes place 50 years ago. So certainly culture has changed a little bit, but honestly, not much. A lot of the, you know, movements that you will see online or those kind of things will talk about some of these very similar things. Finding an outlet for men who want to be men, you know, and I think it's a really important thing for us to not dismiss, but to continue to process through in understanding how the hormones of biological gender impact, you know, those kind of actions. So I was really pleased with the way this movie both cast a side eye at toxic masculinity while at the same time giving full humanness and empathy to the men who were processing it.
Totally. Yeah. Very well said.
Yeah, I dug that quite a bit. I was going to talk about another part of this movie that really impressed me was the structure. I think it is a lot to ask to tell this story in a coherent way through a singular interviewed narrator. I think that's a very difficult thing to do. And I think it works really well because of the way they have, and by the way, I think Mike Feist, I can't remember how it's pronounced.
Me neither, but yeah.
I think I've loved him in everything that I've seen him in. I just love his presence. I think he's great as the reporter here. Mm-hmm. But it's really smart of them to have his reporting be in different times. So it allows the reporting he was doing in the 60s to build the story up. And then when we transition to the reporting, you know, the interviewing he's doing of her in the 70s, or even, I think there's three separate time periods we're dealing with here, if I followed it correctly. I think it's just really, really smart in the way that allows the structure to build and allows us to feel the story chronologically, even though we're pretty much being told the story in hindsight, which is a really difficult thing to do, I think. But I think they pulled it off really, really well.
Yeah. Did you have any negatives?
I do. I do think there is, and I've even already mentioned it, it still does flow into a little bit of admiration for the things these men are doing at times, a little bit too much for me. Mm-hmm. You know, it's one of those things that's hard to quantify, but there is an element of, I'll just say it this way. There's a line the movie draws between the old guys and the young guys. And boy, those young guys, they're just like crazy and they do horrible things. And it's like, you're both crazy and you all do horrible things. But the movie wants to draw a line and say, these are the good rebels and these are the bad rebels. And I'm just like, they're all bad rebels. They're all in a bad place doing bad things. You just have more empathy for, you know, the lesser of the consequential group. So does that make sense to you?
Yeah, if we're going off of the notion of sin is sin, they're all, you know, doing bad things. I can see an argument for some people saying, no, the young guys are doing much worse things.
Sure. Yeah.
But that's not, like you said, that's not an excuse or a pass for the older guard.
But I do feel the movie using that as a way to build up the old guard as admirable, right? Like there is that. And again, I don't think this is the movie's main point. And I think this is a very minor negative, because I think overall the movie actually isn't, that's not the point the movie is trying to make. However, it is a storytelling device that the movie is using to bring admiration and empathy for our main characters by painting this other group of characters as more blatantly evil or whatever it might be. So that, you know, our guys feel a little better in comparison. And that just always annoys me a little bit. But again, I don't think it's the movie's main point. So I don't, you know, I don't hold it against the movie too much.
Mm.
What about you?
I think that for my one negative, I think the film telegraphs its story movements way too much.
Okay.
A smart movie watcher will know all the story beats before they happen. And when you have a movie that is built around the idea of characters who are living a life on the edge and do wild things, I don't think it's good storytelling if you know what these guys are going to do before they do it.
Interesting. I never felt that. I didn't feel really? Like I was aware of where things were going necessarily. And I think maybe that's why the ending hit me so well, is because I didn't know how it was going to end. I didn't know what we were going to find out, you know, at the end about Benny. And so I think the end really, really worked for me because it was a bit of a revelation.
Yeah, I want to talk about Austin Butler a little bit, who played sure. Benny. That role did, I don't know if it's the way he performed it, but it seemed very one note to me. And I know he's trying to play the cool silent type, but at the same time, I'm seeing all these other characters around him that are given so much backstory and so much to do and so much to, you know, express. Whereas him, he's very, and maybe this is just the direction that Jeff Nichols wanted to take the character. I don't know. Or maybe that's the way the character is actually written in the biography. Because this is based on a true story, right?
Well, not, as far as I understand it, not really. It's based on a photo essay book of the central reporter character is based on a real person who did a book about these people. But as far as the actual story in the movie, I don't think that's based on anything, you know, like a cohesive story that happened to people that were specifically the people in this movie. I think it's just a general understanding of, you know, the kind of people that were in, you know, this Chicago Bite gang and those kind of things. I don't even know if the Vandals is actually the real gang. I didn't do any research on the real life comparisons. But yes, it is based on a true exploration of this community, but I think the story is made of whole cloth, if I understand correctly.
Well, if that's the case, then I think that the character is poorly written of Austin Butler's Benny.
I don't know. I don't know if I agree. I think there's something with his presence on screen that's a little bit off with the character. Like, this is the wrong way to say it, but I'll just say it to give you a start into understanding what my mind is trying to do here. He's a little bit too pretty for the character. Like, he's a little bit too James Dean, sexy, cool, when the rest of this movie is willing to be dirty and have rough edges and, you know, be a little more complex. He just seems a little bit less complex than everything else that's going on around him. However, I think the movie by the end of the movie is trying to tell us maybe he was the most complex character all along, which is an interesting thing to do and to say with the way you choose to end the movie, but it would have been nice to have felt that in the movie itself.
100% agree.
Yeah. So I think I see what you're saying there for sure. I'll just make it my one last thing. I mentioned it a couple times. I love the ending of this movie. I'll just say there are a couple smiles at the end of this movie that just made my day. And it's just a well-acted finish. I love what it's saying. I love what it means about the idea of evolution and growing up and change. And I was really impressed with the end of this movie.
Yeah, I totally agree. I really enjoyed the ending. My one last thing will be no post-credit scene, but during the credits there are the actual pictures from the
book. Yeah, there's some of the photos from the actual book that Jeff Nichols saw and wanted to build a story around. So, yeah, that was pretty cool. All right, that is The Bike Riders. I think we clearly both recommend it. We both liked it. And I still don't know why they held on to it. They just felt like there was no way they were going to break into the awards race last year. And they were just like, well, let's, you know, have some time to ourselves in the summer. Do you think this will be, at the end of the year, people will be looking back to The Bike Riders and going, hey, that was maybe we should nominate Jodie Comer?
I could see Jodie Comer getting a nomination. Maybe, you know how like every year there's like one or two indie films that make it into like the Best Picture nomination? I don't know what the rest of the year holds as far as movies coming out, because award season is normally like from September on. For now, she is my favorite performance of the year. So, yeah, I could definitely see her getting a performance.
Yeah, I hope so. I think it's an incredible performance. So I hope we are able to look back at the end of the year and see it get some recognition. That'd be pretty cool. All right, let's move on to the next movie. It is a Netflix foreign film, technically, foreign language film. This is from France. It is called Under Paris. In the summer of 2024, Paris is hosting the World Triathlon Championships on the CN for the first time. Sophia, a brilliant scientist, learns from Mika, a young environmental activist, that a large shark is swimming deep in the river. To avoid a bloodbath at the heart of the city, they have no choice but to join forces with Adil, the river police commander. Under Paris is a shark movie, which I clearly told Andrew before he watched it, just to warn him. No, I did not do that. I'm a terrible friend. It is, you know, kind of a low budget shark attack movie. What did you think? Did you like it, love it, dislike it, hate it, or it was just okay for the parts that you kept your eyes open for?
I did watch it on my phone. I started watching it on my TV, realized it was about sharks, and I said, no, not nope, doing
we're,
this.
We're switching to the 5-inch screen.
Devices. So, hated it. Absolutely hated it.
Hated it, he says. I am firmly in the, it's okay, camp.
The adamance of that
mess. That's right. No one has ever been this passionate about not caring about something. Yeah, I thought it was okay. I think there are highs and lows if you're going to check this out. Clearly, I liked it better since Andrew hated it, and we'll let you talk all about that, I promise. Yes. But I will say... It's always damning with faint praise when you say, man, it could have been a good movie if they had done this, because they didn't do this. But yeah. There is another movie in here with the skeleton of what's going on here that I think could have been really interesting, because I liked the shark stuff. I thought the shark stuff, especially beginning and the end, the bookends of this movie, was really bold. I don't know if I've ever seen a shark movie go there like this movie goes there. Like the choices it's making about what it's doing with this shark in this plot are really, really, could have been really, really interesting to me if it hadn't completely fumbled everything else. But that is why I come away going, it's okay, because I think there is an ability with this movie, if you're in the right mood and you enjoy these kinds of movies, to have it on, look up every once in a while and be like, oh my goodness, this, you know, what just happened, kind of feeling, which can be a fun feeling. And I don't know what it is about shark movies. I really like them. There's something about the idea of an underwater predator that is really interesting.
Terrifying.
it's terrifying. Here's the this is what it is. I think I can put my finger on it. I think I'm just thinking about this for the first time. When it's a shark, I can go, oh, that is terrifying, but not to me, because I'm not in the water. I'm not going to walk out my door today and a shark be, you know, standing there on my road. It's like, you know.
Well, that's what all the people in Paris said too, Aaron.
They went to the water that day. I'm just saying, I'm saying as far as like, and you could say the same thing for, you know, like a bear or whatever. I'm not, you know, but I could, if a bear escaped from the zoo or got lost or something, I could walk out my door and, you know, see a bear. So that's a little scarier to me. You know, but it's interesting to see movies play with the tension of the unseen that can happen in the water. You know, that's the other part of it. There's a tension elevation because water is often murky and you can only have so much, you have so much less visual distance. We're also so much slower in the water as humans, you know? So I don't know. I always find them really interesting. And I think, again, there was something at the center of this that could have been really interesting and really good. And I don't think there's a single performance in this movie I would say is great, but I do think our central performance is passable. And I think if you put a better movie around her, I think it could have been really, really interesting, because I thought she was good enough to carry the movie if it had been a better movie. What are some of your thoughts? Some of your general thoughts. If there's nothing you liked about, that's fine. You can talk about reasons
pros. I actually do have pros for this movie. I think the cinematography is great, especially some of the underwater scenes that are shot incredibly well.
Pretty incredible. Yeah.
Yeah. So we have to remember that, A, this is a foreign language film. It's a French film, so the budget for it wasn't that big. I should have looked up what the budget was before.
I should also say, the only way you can enjoy this movie while doing something else and then looking up occasionally to see how cool it is
speaking French.
Is if you speak French.
Yeah.
Or have an English dub, because, you know, you're going to have to be looking at the screen if you don't speak French. But yes.
I wrote that down, actually. I'm like, the one thing that saved me from being completely terrified is I wasn't looking at the shark. I was reading the subtitles.
That's right. Just focus on the subtitles.
Focus on the words. But no, the special effects, for the most part, are pretty good. There are one or two shots where they were a little bit iffy, but for the most part, I was impressed with the VFX. From what I gather from listening to specialists in the industry, doing VFX works for underwater sequences can be particularly difficult.
Mm-hmm.
The way, you know, light refracts off certain surfaces, as well as microscopic debris in the water, as well as many other things that add up to making it very challenging for a VFX team. If I'm being totally honest, I would say that the VFX shots that took place out of the water are the ones I felt didn't live up to the rest of the VFX.
Mm-hmm.
So,
Like the bright light daytime effects.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think our eyes are much more attuned to pick up the imperfections and, you know, the differences in those situations than underwater, because most of us aren't used to looking at stuff underwater. You know, it's just not something a lot of us experience all the time. Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that. I do think it was beautifully shot, and I thought some of the effects were interesting. I also thought it had some evocative images, too. There's a moment where somebody turns on a red light underwater and looks up, and it was one of the most evocative images I've ever seen in a shark movie. I was just like, wow, that's incredible. And it does have those moments. I really do think it has those moments where it's like, oh, you're doing something interesting here, something unique here. But unfortunately, that's not the entirety of the movie. Berenice Bejo maybe plays Sophia. I'm sure I'm butchering that pronunciation, but I thought she did a good job. What else do you want to say about Under Paris? And we can move into the negatives. That's fine.
None of these characters are believable. And when I say that, I mean the performances. I don't mean the performances of the actors. Although there's nothing really to write home about as far as the performances go, everyone was serviceable in their acting. What I mean by this is the characters themselves make such poor decisions that you find yourself cheering for the shark. And this is why movies... No, I'm serious. This is why movies like Jurassic Park and Jaws are so successful, because they know how to have the conversation of which is more powerful in nature. The brilliance of the human brain versus millions of years of evolution. It's instinct versus intelligence. And humanity's great struggle against nature is always fascinating if done right. This is a case of it not being done right, though, in my eyes.
Yes, I agree with that. I think the movie thinks it's making a different point than those other movies, and therefore...
I would love to know the point of this movie. I would love to know the point of this movie. And by the way, not to cut you off really quick.
No, you're good.
The reason why I say I hate this movie is not just because it's a shark movie.
Sure.
I want to make that clear, that I am able to judge this on a technical level, but at the same time, I would not have watched this movie otherwise.
Yeah. Yeah. I think this movie is trying to say something about our misguided, in this movie's opinion, environmental ideas. And it's one of my biggest negatives of the movie is it's so incoherent, because we have in some ways a setup for two different ideas of environmentalism. And the movie seems to be making a big, big point, especially at the beginning. We're dealing with, you know, animals being stuck in nets and garbage in the ocean. And it's like, this is going to be a shark thriller, but it's going to be about something. It's going to be about, and I think it thought it was, but it's so incoherent that I don't understand which of the two environmental views the movie thinks is good. And I wonder if at the end of the day, maybe the movie is an environmental nihilist, where it's like saying it doesn't matter. Nature is nature. Nature's going to nature because nature is nature, kind of thing. Mm. And our silly arguments about pollution or, you know, whatever. Again, I'm speaking for what maybe possibly this movie is saying, you know, are secondary to the fact that nature is just going to nature. And that maybe we're a little full of ourselves to think that we hold the key to, you know, nature naturing better. Mm-hmm. But the movie never codifies that or makes that in any way cohesive. So I don't know that that's what it's saying. It's just really weird because both our central figure and in some ways an early antagonist figure are hardcore environmentalists, right? Am I missing this? And yet they're opposed to each other. So it's, I don't know. It was weird to try to figure out what this movie is saying about environmentalism.
That is exactly what my issue was, because it's so muddled and it's, I think that it wanted to, but then it's like, you know what, let's just like halfway through, they're like, screw it guys. Let's just make a shark movie, an action shark movie.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. As soon as one of the characters dies, like, I'm not spoiling which character, but surprise, somebody gets eaten in a shark movie, you know. As soon as one of them dies, I'm like, oh, man, okay, so what does that mean for the whole environmental change and the pollution and everything? And it's never brought up again
for the rest of the movie. It just completely disappears for the rest of the movie.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, then you can't be about that. It never was about that. So why did you waste my time with that stuff? Why are we even talking about that stuff if you're not going to have, you know, any kind of understandable view on it? Why aren't they just out having a party at the beginning? Why are they out, you know, saving the whales? Like, it's so weird to me that this movie starts so clearly seeming to want to be about something and then just completely drops it halfway through. I was very confused by that. Couldn't figure that one out. What I do know, mayors are terrible. That I do know.
Thank you. So is this just a French knockoff of Jaws? Many of the elements you see in Jaws are here. You have the mayor who refuses to listen to warnings or reason. You have a shark that is behaving abnormally, a scientist who knows everything, but no one will listen to them. And a cop with a troubled past. This is Jaws. You just need a ship called the Orca and you have Jaws.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you could do worse. You could pick worse at movies to imitate, but it is a lot. I would also argue that it is paint by number Jaws. It is not there. You know, there's a lot of complexity and character nuance in Jaws that this movie doesn't even, you know, sniff. When you have a character like the mayor, who's just this cartoonishly over the top, you know,
I'm going to violently eat my salad.
Yeah. Yep.
You called the ending of this movie bold.
I did.
Does that mean you like it in some ways? Because I hated it.
I like it for a different movie. I don't know what it means for this movie, and I don't understand it in regards to the other things this movie did. Because this movie seemed interested in things that the ending is not interested in. If this movie was interested in the things that it seems like the ending of this movie is interested in, then it could have been interesting. It could have been a different movie. And that boldness would have paid off. But I don't think the boldness pays off because I don't think it earns the ending that it wants to go for. If the simple question is, did I like the ending of this movie? I think I kind of have to say yes. I'm glad they took that swing. I don't think it works for this movie, again, as constituted as it is, but I think I do like the way they decided to end this movie.
Mm. Okay.
If that makes sense. You explain it without spoiling why it bothers you so much?
It felt like The Meg 2. The ending of The Meg 2 reminded me a lot of this. And gosh, I don't know how much of this movie I hate because it's about sharks and how much of it I hate because I think technically it's bad. Because I look at movies like Jaws, and I love Jaws. Jaws is in my top 100 movies of all time. But because the movie is not really about the shark. It kind of, like, everything revolves around the shark, but it's all about the men on the Orca and about them, you know, discovering who they are. When I watched the ending of this movie, it makes me question why I spent so much of my time invested in certain things that either never come to fruition, are never re-explained, or are done for cheap thrills. And I think that that's what the last 20 minutes of this movie is cheap thrills. And then when it ends, I'm like, well, what about this about the shark? You said the shark was doing this, or the shark was behaving because it changed this way. Hope I'm not getting too into spoilers here. But none of that stuff is ever brought up again. And I don't know if that's the ending I have to hate or the movie in general I have to dislike.
That you're required. You're required to hate.
Yeah.
I think the ending in many ways is unresolved, and I think that's purposeful. And so some of that, I don't know. Does this movie think it's getting a sequel? I don't know. I think it just wants to end differently than we're used to these kind of movies ending. But I don't think it earns too many points based on what it's doing the rest of the movie. In fact, for what this movie might be trying to do, what's the Blake Lively shark movie? Names of that movie slips my mind, but
it's not Deep Blue Sea. That's
a different one. But but that movie, I think, may actually succeed at doing what this movie thinks it's doing.
The Shallows.
So maybe don't watch this. Maybe watch The Shallows. I think that's a better version of where I think this movie maybe wants to go. But
there's a seagull named Steven Seagal.
So there.
It's automatically a better movie.
Correct. Do you have one last thing to say about Under Paris?
No post-credit scene.
That's true. The only thing I have left to say about this movie is, why would you be swimming in that river anyway? This is gross. Those city rivers are so gross.
Oh my gosh, yeah. And what are...
And not just Paris. I'm not just talking in Paris. I'm talking in
the Thames, you know, London, city,
all the U.S. city rivers. Like, they're gross.
I drove over the Missouri River the other day as I was driving up to St. Louis. That is just mud, running mud. That's what that river is.
Well, even like there are stretches of the Missouri River I might, or the whatever, you know, the big rivers I might swim in, but they're usually in more natural settings. Once you get into the city, there's so much trash in them and it's just nasty. Like you're just asking for tetanus at that point, you know? Yeah, anyhow, that's my one last thing. all right, before we head into the best ever challenge, reminder, you can be a SiftPop member. You do that at Patreon, patreon.com/SiftPop. Appreciate you doing that. It starts at $3 a month and supports all the stuff that we do. So if you want to go check that out, again, it's patreon.com/SiftPop. And we appreciate it.
Most tax pros leave a message.
It's Jane. I'm moving on to a TurboTax expert who beat your price. Adam Devine, tell him how I feel.
Hey, tax pro, she's been thinking twice. Best believe TurboTax will beat your price.
This is a tax break.
Switch to a TurboTax live expert and we'll beat what you paid your pro last tax season. Make the switch at TurboTax.com/beat your price. TurboTax full service only. Sign up by 12/20/2024 and file by 4/1/2025. Full details at TurboTax.com/beat your price.
Most tax pros leave a message.
It's Jane. I'm moving on to a TurboTax expert who beat your price. Adam Devine, tell him how I feel.
Hey, tax pro, she's been thinking twice. Best believe TurboTax will beat your price.
This is a tax break.
Switch to a TurboTax Live Expert and we'll beat what you paid your pro last tax season. Make the switch at TurboTax.com/beatyourprice. TurboTax full service only. Sign up by 12/20/2024 and file by 4/1/2025. Full details at TurboTax.com/beatyourprice.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right, best ever challenge this week, best ever bike movies, movies that feature a bicycle of some sort. That does include motorbikes, just to be clear. This is a stretchy category, you know, finding the line between featuring a bike and containing a bike is, you know, an interesting one. For what it's worth, I went with featuring a bike. Like, I tried as much as possible for my choices to actually have a bike that was central to the movie in some way, and that's where I landed. But I don't begrudge anybody picking whatever they want to pick, so we will go through it. We will go number five to number one, and if you have it higher,
Trump!
Then you will trump it, and we will talk about it wherever it is the highest. Andrew, kick us off. What is your number five best ever bike movie?
My number five features a bike heavily, but it could be a stretch to call it a bike movie. I'm going to go with E.T. the Extraterrestrial.
Yeah, E.T. is like right on the cusp for me, right?
Yeah.
It's that bike scene is so iconic. And yeah. Spielberg is, you know, like Kids on Bikes is kind of one of Spielberg's thing. And that is
yeah.
that is nowhere more evident than E.T. So, yeah, this one's right on the cusp for me. I have no problem with including E.T. As your number five.
I watched it a couple months ago just because I was in a Spielberg craze, and it was one that I hadn't seen since I was very, very young. I saw the remastered edition, and wow, the remastered edition is very, very good. Some of the practical effects for E.T. hold up. I mean,
nice
to this day, and it's a really good movie.
Yeah, I dig E.T. I need to do a rewatch as well. Just an incredible ability of Spielberg to give such life and empathy to a little rubber puppet, you know, like it's wild how much you care about that creature and how low tech it is. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Pretty incredible work. My number five is Pee-wee's Big Adventure.
Nice. My first honorable mention.
Gets the bike stolen, and it's in the basement of the Alamo. But the Alamo, I don't know if you know this, doesn't have a basement. Pee-wee's Big Adventure is a ton of fun, and it's one of those random silly movies. It's kind of... These come around every once in a while. Like Napoleon Dynamite was like this. We're just quirky, silly, and not trying to be anything, but it works. You're just kind of zoned in to the central character and kind of want to see what their world is like. And Pee-wee's Big Adventure is one of my faves. So that comes in at number five for me.
Was the character of Pee-wee Herman already an established character before this movie had come out, or was this, like, I don't know, Pee-wee's Playhouse was around before this?
Well... my memory is that Pee-wee's Playhouse was around first, but that does not mean anything because memories are very, very fallible. So I'm going to use the completely infallible internet.
It's never made a mistake.
to find out when Pee-wee's Playhouse was going on. So yeah, Pee-wee's Playhouse started in 1986.
1985
was.
You know what else started in 1986?
What?
Me.
Nice. Pee-wee's Big Adventure was 85. So maybe Pee-wee's Big Adventure was the first big cultural revelation of the Pee-wee character, but it had to exist before that. He had to be doing that character somewhere.
Oh, like stand-up or something?
Yeah, or something before that, I would think. We should look it up. We should, sometime when we're not recording a show, look it up and kind of see how that developed, because that's an interesting thing. Yep. All right, what is your number four?
Going to talk with Anthony Hopkins here about the world's fastest Indian. And there it is.
My number four is going to talk with Joseph Gordon-Levitt about a premium rush.
This is in my must-see movies.
I'm not sure this is a great movie, but boy, did I have fun with it. And if you don't know, this is a movie about a bicycle service.
Courier.
Yeah, a courier service that's on bike. And I think it's shot really well. The action is really interesting on the bicycles. I've never had a movie give me the feeling of what it's like to ride a bike in New York City like this this movie gives you. I thought this movie was really, really good. So Premium Rush, I think, is worth a watch. All right, what is your number three?
Let's hang out with Tron Legacy.
Yes, that was in my honorable mentions. Actually, Tron was in my honorable mentions. So.
I prefer Legacy over the original Tron, but I do not begrudge anybody who has nostalgia for the original one. Mm-hmm. I came to the original Tron way later in life, so I didn't, you know, get to appreciate it whenever I was younger. Like, I thought it was very dated. Mm-hmm. You know,
it is. It is. Yeah, it doesn't hold up extremely well. But it is interesting.
Yeah. But Tron Legacy, absolutely love. It's my, no BS. I think it's the best soundtrack for any movie ever. I think Daft Punk just blew it out of the water.
Nice. Yeah, it's an incredible soundtrack. All right, on to my number three.
Yep.
I just saw this movie for the first time within the last couple of weeks. Breaking Away is my number three. Breaking Away is a 1978 film about four friends in Bloomington, Indiana, who are born and raised there. Of course, Bloomington is also where Indiana University is. And so there's a little bit of university kids versus townies kind of stuff going on here. But it all culminates in a bike race at the end. And our central character is somebody who has fallen in love with bike racing through watching the Italians bike race. And so he puts on an Italian accent at the beginning and speaks Italian. He's learning Italian. He's like almost pretending to be Italian while he rides this bike. And I won't give away some of the stuff that happens, but Dennis Quaid is in this, and Daniel Stern, I think, in it
Jackie
as well.
Earl Haley.
Jackie Earl Haley, all very young. In fact, young enough to play these, you know, 18, 19, 20-year-olds. And it's really good. Nominated for several Oscars. In fact, if Kramer versus Kramer didn't happen, it might have won Best Picture. It's a really good movie and one I'm glad I watched, and definitely features bicycles. So Breaking Away is my number three.
Nice.
What do you got at number two?
We just reviewed this movie a couple weeks ago. I'm going to go with Furiosa Mad Max Saga.
Features.
Because Dementis had a biker gang. That's what they were. They were a bike gang.
That's right. Yeah, in that first opening. Yeah. I can go with that.
It's great. It's such a good movie.
It is.
It's really good.
It's a really good movie.
Yeah.
My number two is Luca. The Pixar movie. Bike features prominently there in Luca, and Vespas, which are kind of motorized bikes in many ways. But yeah, I really enjoy Luca. I think we will look back at this run of original Pixar films eventually and go, oh my goodness, we didn't realize how good we had it. Because Pixar seems poised, especially after Inside Out 2 is blowing the box office away, to move away a little bit from the original films in favor of continuing to build franchises. And I get it, but I think we're going to look back at Turning Red and Luca and Soul and just this run that has happened here and go, oh, that stuff is really, really good. And
it's only because they came out on streaming services instead of theaters.
That's part of it. Yeah, I think that's a big part of it. But so I think history will be kind to these movies. And Luca is a different kind of Pixar movie, really, than, I mean, both animation wise, the type of animation it uses, and, you know, some of the things it's doing. So, yeah, Luca is great. I love it.
Very good pick.
Number ones? What is your number one?
It's probably going to get vetoed, but I think that it features a motorcycle very heavily in a scene, and that's T2 Judgment Day.
Well, I'm not going to veto it. There's a motorcycle in it, and it's, you know, it's part of a big moment in the movie. That's fine.
Cool. One of my favorite movies ever. It's great. Check out the Terminator franchise. And when I say the Terminator franchise, I mean T1 and T2, because
that's
those are the only two movies. Right? There are no other Terminator movies.
Of course. I mean, I wouldn't have stooped so low to put it in my list, but you know, you can you can do whatever you want to do. My number one, it definitely heavily features a motorbike. It is World's Fastest Indian, as already mentioned by Andrew. And the only crossover on our list this week, right?
Was it?
Yeah, it was. So, wow. Other than honorable mentions, you know, you had Pee-wee's Big Adventure in your honorable mentions, and I had Tron in mine. But yeah, I think World's Fastest Indian is the only one we both mentioned, and I think for good reason. It is
so good.
It is such a good movie, and way underseen. Not enough people have seen this movie. Anthony Hopkins is great. It tells a great true story. I think it's shot really well. You know, it is about attempting to break the land speed record and those kind of things. But more than that, it's about humanity and perseverance and some really deep and interesting things. So World's Fastest Indian. It also has a terrible title because 9 out of 10, maybe 9.5 out of 10 people aren't going to immediately go, oh, yeah,
Indian is a motorcycle.
The Indian motorcycle. No, they're going to be like, oh, this is about a native, a fast running Native American. Like, you know, it's just a bad title. But it is a great movie. World's Fastest Indian with Anthony Hopkins is my number one.
Yeah, it's just a feel good movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I like feeling good. I don't know about you, but feeling good is on my A-OK list.
Rather watch that than shark movies.
You know, I see World's Fastest Shark.
World's Fastest Mako.
There you go. Those are our top five. All my honorable mentions have been taken. Do you have any left that you want to mention, or you want to go straight to the Sif Pop team?
I had one honorable mention that wasn't mentioned. That was Akira.
Sure. Yeah, that's an iconic shot. On the motorcycle on Akira. So, yeah, I totally get that.
Yeah. The Gurus, however, were quite imaginative with their picks.
They really stretched the category.
Yeah. For the most part.
I think they did this on the website this week, too. And I looked over that list and I saw Pope's Exorcist was in there because he rides a Vespa. I was like, that's stretching the category a little thin.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm glad you like the Pope's Exorcist so much.
Yeah, exactly. coming in at number three, we have a three-way tie, actually. T2. The Bicycle Thieves, and Looper.
Looper's an interesting choice. Where's the bike in Looper?
They have the hover bikes.
Okay, all right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess they do. The Bicycle Thieves choice, I'm sure, is a great choice. It's on my list of shame. I need to see it. And
me too,
I haven't seen it. So I'm sure that is one I'm glad they mentioned, because somebody would listen to this and go, where are the Bicycle Thieves? Because it's like a classic, and I just haven't seen it.
I'm in the same boat as you. Number two, The Dark Knight, because of the bat cycle.
Yep, there's a bat cycle in there. That's true.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Good call.
Number one, we have Return of the Jedi.
Because of the speeders? Are they saying the speeders are bikes?
Yeah. The speeder chase on Endor,
you know,
the moon of Endor.
I would veto. Look, I said this was a stretchy category, but I'm vetoing any hover technology, because the definition of a bicycle
is
two wheels. That's the definition. Two wheels. That at bare minimum, if you're going to call something a bike, it must have two wheels and two wheels only. Hovering is not a bicycle. That is a hover cycle.
Sickle. It's in the name.
Queen said it perfectly.
Bicycle.
I veto all of that. How dare you try to stretch the category to include
all the
hover
gurus
vehicles.
Are fired.
Looper's gone. Return of the Jedi's gone. Come on. What are we doing here?
Yeah.
My outrage is completely authentic. All right.
And just.
And just. Let's finish off with some buried treasure. What's that one thing in any area of pop culture that you want to make sure people know about? Kick us off, Mr. Ormsby. What do you got?
I have started a journey, Aaron, and one that I am very excited. A journey, you say? Yes. I am finally sitting down, and I'm going to start to finish Better Call Saul.
Oh, okay. All right.
I've only seen the first season, but I only saw it whenever it came out.
Right.
So I've gone back. I've bought all the seasons, all six seasons. I'm rewatching the first season, picking up things that I'd forgotten about. And I just finished the season finale of season one. Yeah, I'm very excited to see where this journey goes. I have had some things spoiled for me because...
Oh, that's not by, fun.
I should say spoiled for me by myself, because I would turn on the TV and it would be on and I would just have it playing in the background. So I know about what happens with his brother and all these sort of things. So, but it's interesting to see, you know, his brother's quote unquote condition and what that means for his family, what it means for Saul. And now I know through just the cultural zeitgeist that like Gus is going to come back for this show as well. Yeah, I'm just excited to see where I go with this, but season one is down and in the books.
Rewatched, like you had watched season one and you...
I'd watched season one.
And so you've rewatched it to catch, you know, to get back up to date with it being fresh. And now you're going to, for the first time, actually dive into seasons 2 through 6.
Yes.
Nice. Well, I hope you enjoy. I think it's one of the greatest miracles of television ever that they made such a good sequel to one of the best TV shows of all time. It's wild to me that they hit it out of the park twice. Better Call Saul is phenomenal in my opinion. Yeah. So I'm glad you're
doing
that.
Fun fact, on IMDb, it is Better Call Saul is rated the 26th greatest show of all time.
I think I talked about it in the moment. I would have the debate about Breaking Bad versus Better Call Saul, and I think it would be a decent debate. They're both so good.
Well, the internet disagrees with you because number one on the greatest shows of all time is Breaking Bad.
You know, the internet.
I am such a huge fan of Breaking Bad. Like, I loved that show so much that I don't know why I didn't just commit to jumping into Better Call Saul whenever I did, because I've seen Camino or El Camino. I've watched every episode of Breaking Bad. It's just one of those things I just never got around to for one reason or another. Things would pop up, but I'm starting it now.
Yeah, I don't get too offended when the internet disagrees with me because, like, the internet believes that Return of the Jedi is a bicycle movie. So I, you know, I'm fine. All right. My buried treasure. I got around to watching a movie that came out earlier this year called The Book of Clarence. Have you seen it?
Just trailers. What'd you think?
I really, really liked it. Maybe loved it even. It is a retelling of the Christ story, but through an African-American lens. And the biggest benefit of doing it this way, or the one of the most interesting things, is the idea of who the Jews were in that system is very similar to African Americans in the United States. So there's this real interesting idea of, the ideas of, you know, helping people out. It contextualizes Jesus's mission and story in such a perfect way. It's also directed by the same person who did The Harder They Fall, which I really, really enjoyed. Mm-hmm. And it has that same real sense of tonality and needle drops and some really cool stuff going on. The cast is amazing. Lakeith Stanfield was born to play this role. He actually plays two roles in the movie. The movie is not trying to be faithful to the Gospels as we know them in the Bible. It's trying to be faithful to the themes and ideas through the way that it's presenting these characters. And it makes some really interesting choices that I think are beautiful and meaningful and gave me a lot to chew on and a lot to think about and to recontextualize my faith in some ways. So I really, really dig it. There are some cameo-type performances, the most interesting of which is probably Benedict Cumberbatch.
As Benjamin.
And James McAvoy as Pontius Pilate is interesting. But you've also got Tiana Taylor in here. I was trying to think, who else? There was somebody else.
Alfre Woodard?
Yes, that's who it was. Alfre Woodard shows up for a cameo that I thought was really good as well. I just think it's well worth a watch. It's well worth a watch. I don't know for someone who isn't maybe as foundationally steeped in their life in, you know, this message and this text, if it sings the same way, but I think it would be an interesting watch no matter what you believe. Honestly, I think it's really, really good. Especially in a world and specifically a culture where the textual message of this man has been so warped by so many different groups to mean what they want it to mean. It's interesting to kind of go back to the source and feel it in this way. So that's The Book of Clarence. It is streaming on Netflix. I should also mention Better Call Saul, all six seasons are on Netflix right now as well. So if you want to watch Better Call Saul, I think that's available for you on Netflix too. Well, we did it, man. We did another podcast.
Woo!
Congratulations. We succeeded in doing stuff and things.
Yeah. Proud of us.
Well done. We didn't swim in a dirty river and get eaten by a shark.
Or get tetanus.
Tetanus would... I don't know that I'd be worried about tetanus when I'm missing my limbs.
Oh no, a shark. Oh no, tetanus.
Run towards the shark, away from the tetanus. thank you so much for joining us today. Sif Pop is part of the Studio DNA Podcast Network. You can find out more about other shows on the network by searching Studio DNA in your podcast player. Huge thanks to Andrew for hanging out again today.
Thank you, buddy.
Big thanks to producer Phil for producing the audio and video show.
Thanks, Phil.
Much love and gratitude to our Sif Pop members. We love you. Appreciate you for giving monthly to make Sif Pop a real thing. Keeps it solid. Keeps it going. Support starts at $3 a month. You can check all that out there at patreon.com/SifPop. You can connect with us in lots of ways. You can leave a comment, a rating, or a review wherever you listen, whether that's Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever it might be. You can also email us, feedback@SifPop.com. And finally, if you're having a good time, your movie-loving friends will probably like the show too. So make sure you let them know about it, and that listening is much easier than convincing a mayor to do the right thing in a disaster film. We will be back next week with more. Lots of big stuff continues to come out. We'll keep talking about it, and we'll see you next week to do so. Bye.
Bye.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.